The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Christian Outlook, the weekly radio program that sorts through the issues in our fast-changing world in a way that honors your Christian faith. Brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. I'm Don Crow. Great to be with you. This week, we'll look at the intersection of politics and sport. The NBA bows to China.
The NBA issued a rather pathetic apology.
And a mother makes a case for a level playing field for her track athlete daughter.
She will lose athletic opportunities to a pernicious gender ideology.
And Democrats debate in Central Ohio with a clear message.
We have to impeach this president.
We'll look at the agenda of all the top Democrats, now made very clear.
It comes down to whether or not a Christian institution can act according to its own convictions.
We have all this and more. I'm your host, Don Crow, coming to you from my home station of WAVA in Washington, D.C. Catch my program live each weekday afternoon on WAVA.com and also through the TuneIn radio app. Thanks for joining us. We'll begin with the NBA. When you hear about the National Basketball Association, you'd think we'd be talking about basketball, about sports. But the news of late for the NBA is only tangentially related to sports. It's very much about freedom and very much about our business dealings with a communist nation that is hostile to what have, historically at least, been core American values. For more, we'll turn to a frequent guest on my program, Nathan Weininger from a group championing religious liberty, 21 Wilberforce. He joined me on WAVA. For people who might not have heard what has happened, explain why the NBA is trying to censor members of the organization who are Americans. What's going on there?
Well, last week, the Houston Rockets general manager, Daryl Morey, tweeted a simple statement, "Fight for freedom, stand with Hong Kong." And then it seemed like the gates of tyranny were unleashed upon him. The Chinese consulate in Houston attacked his statement, and the NBA demanded that he retract it as well. The NBA issued what I think is a rather pathetic apology with, in fact, two different translations, one going to the Chinese government that was even more obsequious, using language that the Chinese government expects companies to say, basically quoting Chinese communist propaganda back to it to feed to its population. The Chinese Communist Party then canceled various events and threatened to cancel the $1.5 billion contract the NBA has for distribution of NBA content. All this stems from protests going on in Hong Kong right now, protests being led in many cases by people of faith, people with strong religious convictions, who are seeing their rights as Hong Kongers diminished. In fact, religious freedom rights, as you know, are in the crosshairs of the Communist Party. And as we see more and more horrific news coming out, it's vitally important that people who are concerned about these rights abuses, including religious freedom and free speech, stand together against this oppression that the Chinese Communist Party is now exporting to our major league sporting events here in the U.S.
And as I understand it, I remember one occasion I saw in the news a week or two ago, there were many Christians singing hymns in the Hong Kong protests. So some of these are fellow believers.
That is correct. Many people in the Hong Kong protests are Christian believers, as well as a few other different types of believers from different faith backgrounds. But Christians are leading these protests. They're standing in solidarity with the rights that they have as Hong Kongers, that they've been guaranteed under the one country, two-party system that China agreed to when it took over Hong Kong. And those rights are being systematically stripped away. They don't have to look far to see what their religious freedom rights would be like if China were to continue to impose and violate the agreements that it has made. It only has to look to what's happening to the Tibetan Buddhists for years, the internment camps that Uyghur Muslims are facing, as well as the increasing surveillance of Christians in the Christian heartland of China. We're now, according to Bob Fu, who you just mentioned earlier, of China Aid, facial recognition cameras and that technology that was first tried out on Uyghur Muslims is now being used in Christian churches to survey who is there and make sure that they have registered who is going to churches. The cameras aren't facing the pulpit. They're sitting on the pulpit facing the congregation.
Now, back to the NBA. Is the NBA unique in this regard regarding China, or have other companies run into the same problems or just caved in?
Sadly, there are many Western companies that have done things like the NBA, and American companies is perhaps the most tragic. They have been built in this country on the rights, freedom of speech rights, freedom of assembly rights. Those are all vitally important to American companies, but they've capitulated, and they're doing it in big and small ways. Everyone from Apple to American Airlines to the shoe company Vans, and it's amazing how incredibly petty the Chinese government can be. In the American Airlines case, the Civilian Aviation Authority required that American Airlines no longer list Taiwan as a country within its systems. And the Vans situation, truly horrific situation, they disallowed participants within a competition to design sneakers to participate who were from Hong Kong, and then put out a truly Orwellian statement that said they were open for all voices to be able to contribute to that competition. There are more dangerous examples as well. Apple removed an app from its store which allowed protesters exercising their rights to free speech and assembly in Hong Kong to know where police were congregating. These are the same police that have been accused credibly by various people and various organizations of committing torture and various human rights abuses. And these people, the protesters, were able to, through this app in the Apple store, able to know where some of those forces were. Apple removed that app under pressure from the Chinese Communist Party. So we see capitulations right and left from American companies who have used our system and our rights and our constitution to grow and to practice their entrepreneurship. And then they capitulate when there is the first hint of the Chinese Communist Party not liking what they're saying or doing.
What can listeners do to get involved?
One of the things that China uses to control information is their great firewall. So ironically, no one in China could see the tweets coming from the NBA until China told them about it. Well, we have tools to get around those, but the U.S. government agency that's responsible for that has been really not engaged. And so we're very hopeful that the next leader of the U.S. Agency for Global Media will be able to actually make a difference on that. And people can call their senator and ask for him to be confirmed as soon as possible. We think that we need leadership there. We at least need to have a vote to take place so that his recommendation from the administration for that position can be fully considered by the U.S. Senate.
If we'd prefer politics to stay out of sports, as I'm sure many of you do, I think we'd better get accustomed to the new realities. The intersection of political and cultural agendas with sports is increasingly prevalent and increasingly distressing. Girls High School Track should be about just that. Girls High School Track. That's the position of one mother, Cheryl Radichowski. She spoke up in the New York Post. My colleague Frank Sontag from KKLA in Los Angeles took a closer look.
Cheryl Radichowski is a mom of a young woman who runs track in Connecticut. And the New York Post has picked up a commentary, an opinion piece by her, which is called "Justice for Trans Athletes is Unfair to Girls Like My Daughter." Study after study has reaffirmed this basic fact about what it means to be human. Most recently, Swedish scientists followed 11 biological men whose testosterone was dramatically decreased due to cross-sex hormone treatments over a year. Even when the men's testosterone levels matched that of a biological woman, the men's competitive advantages remained almost fully intact, with muscle size and bone density remaining virtually unchanged in some and decreasing only 5% in others. While such studies are crucial evidence in the debate over biologically male athletes competing in girls' sports, again, this is a mom. Her name is Cheryl Radichowski. She writes, "I don't need to list all of them here. You can Google that for yourself. But you can't Google my front row seat as a mom of a high school athlete who has been beaten out by a biological male athlete who identifies as a woman. In fact, one who has not undergone hormone therapy or gender reassignment surgery and who competes this previous year earlier as a male. My daughter, Alana, now a sophomore, is a rising star in our home state of Connecticut. As a freshman, she led her high school team to its third straight championship in the Connecticut Interscholastic Athletic Conference by winning the 1, 200, and 400-meter race in one of the most dominant individual performances in meet history. She was an integral component in the team's first-place finish in the state open and in smashing a pair of records at the New England Championships in Maine. Alana has devoted countless days, nights, weekends to training. She pushes herself to share mere fractions of a second from her race times. Yet she positions herself at the starting line knowing that now, even with all that training and with her best effort, the odds are against her, the numbers are against her, and that fairness doesn't really exist anymore. Since 2017, our state's high school athletic conference has allowed biological boys to compete against girls. It's enough that they subjectively identify as female. Since then, two biological boys have won 15 women's track championships, titles held by nine different girls in 2016. Not only that, the same two biological boys have taken away more than 50 chances for girls to compete at the next level of competition, running these girls right off the track and forcing them to be spectators in their own sport. As a parent, it is gut-wrenching to know that no matter how hard my daughter now works to achieve her goals, she will lose athletic opportunities to a pernicious gender ideology. Our daughters deserve better than to have their athletic opportunities stolen from them. My daughter deserves to compete, to achieve, to earn the opportunity to advance to the next level of competition, to earn a college scholarship, and to enter into adulthood with all the confidence of a fierce, proven champion, a champion who knows she won fairly. No biological male should take those opportunities from my daughter, regardless of how he self-identifies. Finally, this is not a battle I sought. I would have rather the contest take place on the track, but when my daughter's dreams are at stake, I can no longer stay silent. Neither should you.
Coming up, Democrats debate in Ohio.
The impeachment must go forward.
We have to impeach this president.
It is absolutely imperative to go forward with impeachment.
This president is the most corrupt president in modern history.
The Christian Outlook returns in a moment. Our program is coming to you today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership program offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Welcome back to the Christian Outlook, brought to you in partnership with ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. I'm Don Crow. Democratic candidates seeking the nomination to represent their party for the office of president next year squared off for another debate this week. Their message, with regard to our current president, was very clear.
The impeachment must go forward.
We have to impeach this president.
It is absolutely imperative to go forward with impeachment.
This president, and I agree with Bernie, Senator Sanders, is the most corrupt president in modern history, and I think all of our history.
I don't really think this impeachment process is going to take very long.
But there was another gathering of the aspiring nominees on October 10th that demands our attention. CNN labeled it the Equality Town Hall, and the Los Angeles event certainly made news. It was Beto O'Rourke who made clear how he'd deal with tax exemption for traditionally minded churches.
There can be no reward, no benefit, no tax break.
Here's Albert Mohler from his briefing program.
CNN's Equality Town Hall, held last Thursday night, was indeed an earthquake. It was an earthquake morally, politically, and culturally. You might say that finally the teeth were absolutely bared. It came in an exchange, first of all, between Don Lemon and Beto O'Rourke, the former candidate for Texas senator and current candidate for president of the United States and the Democratic nomination. Lemon asked him,
"Do you think religious institutions like colleges, churches, charities, should they lose their tax-exempt status if they oppose same-sex marriage?"
Yes. There can be no reward, no benefit, no tax break for anyone or any institution, any organization in America that denies the full human rights and the full civil rights of every single one of us. And so as president, we're going to make that a priority, and we are going to stop those who are infringing upon the human rights of our fellow Americans.
This particular issue is what we might call the neutron bomb of American politics and the most explosive issue that we are facing in the collision between religious liberty and the newly declared sexual liberties. Many of us have in print and in voice been making the case for a long time that this was the position undertaken by the secular left, but it's increasingly clear that it is the position of the Democratic Party. There was just one candidate who used these exact words on Thursday night, but as we shall see in the course of this discussion, the movement on this issue is now such that it is virtually impossible that any one of the major contenders for the Democratic presidential nomination or even a major leader in the Democratic Party will be able or even willing to walk this back, even a millimeter. As I said, we have seen this coming in the oral arguments for the Obergefell decision that eventually legalized same-sex marriage. The then Solicitor General of the United States, Donald Verrilli, representing the Obama administration, was asked both by the Chief Justice and by Justice Samuel Alito if there would be a collision between religious liberty and the new liberty of same-sex marriage. And Donald Verrilli answering the question as to whether, for example, a Christian college or university might be in trouble if it discriminated on the basis of, say, same-sex marriage or gender identity, he said, infamously, "It will be an issue." Well, that "will" was a future tense, but what happened on Thursday night was a present tense. It was a clear and present threat from a leading contender for the Democratic nomination that he intends not only to strip religious organizations that hold what he considers to be the wrong view on marriage of their tax-exempt status, but Don Lemon asked the question in a far broader way. He actually used the word churches. And without, again, skipping a beat, Beto O'Rourke went ahead and said yes, an unconditional yes. Shortly after this took place, Beto O'Rourke then tweeted his own statement, very proud of it, making very clear he wasn't going to walk it back. About 24 hours later, he did appear, according to the press, to walk it back slightly when he said he wasn't really talking about religious institutions and churches simply on the basis of their beliefs, but rather on any discriminatory actions. But the press gave him far too much credit for saying that was walking it back at all, because in reality, that is where the collision is taking place. It comes down to the question as to whether or not a Christian institution, a Christian school, or for that matter now, a Christian congregation, can act according to its own convictions. Action in this case could be for a congregation as simple as deciding who is and who is not a member of the church. We're not just talking here about some kind of possible hypothetical future collision between religious liberty and the new sexual liberty. We saw the collision take place on the stage of the CNN Equality Town Hall. And what I want us to see is that we actually saw that collision taking place over and over again, just with different words, and we might say with different degrees of honesty. It's at this point I want to issue what I consider to be the most important challenge imaginable. If this is not the position of the other contenders for the Democratic nomination, then I dare them to say so, even one. I can almost promise you ahead of time, not one of them will walk back O'Rourke's position to the slightest degree. They may use different language, they may try to be a little bit more evasive, but the position they will hold to, because they have to keep the attention of the Democratic left, it's going to be the very same position.
And as we're thinking about how these kinds of moral revolutions work, and this one literally at warp speed, we need to remind ourselves that Beto O'Rourke ran for the United States Senate as the Democratic nominee against Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz just not even 2 years ago in 2018. But at that point, he ran with a very different personality. He ran on an extremely different platform. And at least to the credit of the Dallas Morning News, the local newspaper has noticed. A Dallas Morning News editorial the day after the town hall said, quote, Beto embraces divisions by wanting to tax religious organizations over gay marriage, and continued, the presidential candidate is running a different campaign than the Senate candidate. The editors wrote, quote, when Beto O'Rourke ran for Senate last year, he presented himself as someone who could reach across the political divide and work with those he disagrees with. Now, as he runs for president this year, candidate Beto is embracing the politics of sharp divisions. Just days ago, he said that, yes, he is coming for automatic weapons to be confiscated by the government. And now he says no tax exemptions for even religious organizations and churches that don't toe the line on the LGBTQ revolution. We can't truly read the heart of any other individual. That's a part of the human predicament. But we can hear and read their words. And in this case, in the span of just a matter of months, we have not one Beto O'Rourke, but two. And even if we can't read his heart, we can read what this says about American culture, about the changing landscape around us, and about the radicalization of the Democratic Party. Just go back about 12 years in your imagination. 12 years, the blink of an eye in human history. Go back 12 years, and Barack Obama is running for the Democratic nomination for President of the United States, and he wants to be on the record as not supporting the legalization of same-sex marriage, just 12 years ago. The massive revolution in morality, especially on matters of marriage and sexuality and gender, has been so fast and its ramifications so wide that if you just consider the town hall that took place on Thursday night, it appears that Senator Elizabeth Warren insinuated that Barack Obama in 2008 didn't even deserve to have a spouse. And now Beto O'Rourke, actually accompanied by virtually every one of the candidates there on the stage, says you don't deserve to have any voice in this society either. And just to make that point, we will use the coercive power of government to silence you.
Coming up, bringing help to the most vulnerable amongst us.
It's important to understand that when we talk about human trafficking, we're not just talking about sexual slavery or sex trafficking. It's any type of labor without consent.
The Christian Outlook returns in a moment. The Christian Outlook podcast brought to you in partnership with Alliance Defending Freedom. ADF provides help at no cost to those whose religious freedom is being violated, but they can't do it without your help. Call 800-654-3969. That's 800-654-3969, or click on the banner ad at christianoutlook.com. Just another summer night, had to be the last thing on my mind. Welcome back to the Christian Outlook, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. I'm Don Crow. When we hear the word slavery today, many of us are inclined, in our head, to go back to a darker era in our nation's history. An era we have, thankfully, moved past. But slavery is not altogether eradicated, not even in the United States. And the slavery we see today is every bit as heinous as that of our nation's past. IGM, the International Justice Mission, is on the front lines of this fight, doing a great work for the least of these. Sean Litton from IGM was a guest of Craig Roberts on KFAX in San Francisco.
It was an eye-opening, startling experience for me to come to the realization that human trafficking is very much alive all over the world today, even taking place here in the United States. And it takes place in many fashions for a lot of different reasons. In China, walking along a street in a major city of the South one day and seeing a number of young girls, some of whom had obvious limbs missing, had been maimed, perhaps, I thought, in an accident of some sort. And in talking with A missionary friend and interpreter began to inquire about the alarming number of young ladies that I saw on this particular street that seemed to have a missing arm or a missing hand, something of this nature. And I inquired as to why this was, feeling it was kind of unusual. He went on to explain to me that, well, these are cast-offs. These are young girls who had been kidnapped from their home villages, brought into major cities, and sold as sex slaves, largely the tourist trade. And on occasions, these young girls would fail to cooperate, would perhaps try to turn their captors into the authorities, and so as retribution, they would typically cut off an arm or a hand to maim them in one fashion or another as a means of disfiguring them, making them less desirable, handicapping their ability to earn a living, and ultimately punishing them for not being cooperative with the sex traffickers. That experience that I had in China a number of years ago, I sadly have come to discover, was not a unique and rare one, but in fact is taking place in more and more places around the globe today, even in so-called developed nations. Tell us why.
The main problem, as we see it, is in countries where the laws against these crimes are not enforced at all. In other words, the traffickers, the criminals, the pimps who are selling these children have no fear of any sanction, no fear of any repercussion, no fear of any negative consequences, and so they engage in this practice with impunity, despite the fact that in almost every country today, it's against the law. It's against the law to sell children for sex.
And as this sex trafficking trade is growing and developing, talk to us a bit about, number one, how girls get even pulled into all of this, and why it seemingly is being allowed to flourish in some countries.
The children that get involved, typically, they're from very poor and impoverished areas, and someone comes to their village, somebody from their same ethnic group. They come to the village, maybe they're from the village or a nearby village, and they tell their parents, you know, I can help your daughter find a good job in the city. And so she wants to help her parents, so she'll go with this auntie. And then the auntie, it turns out, is a trafficker. And rather than give her a good job or take care of her, this young woman will be sold into a brothel.
And these girls, Sean, literally get trapped into this scenario. They're far away from home. They're embarrassed about the circumstances that have taken place. And quite often, those that are engaged in the sex trafficking threaten these girls and their families, don't they?
Absolutely, yes. And so the trafficker will tell the girl, I paid good money for you. And if you don't cooperate, then, you know, I will find your family. Or there'll be stories of girls who have attempted to run away only to be brought back and killed in front of the other girls to frighten them into submission and cooperation. And it's important to understand that when we talk about human trafficking, we're not just talking about sexual slavery or sex trafficking. It's any type of labor without consent. We're basically talking about slavery. It takes many different forms. So it could be working on a cocoa plantation in West Africa, or working on a fishing boat, little boys forced to work in a fishing boat in Ghana. Or, you know, it could be young girls in brothels in Southeast Asia, or people working in a brick kiln or a rice mill or a rock quarry in India. So it takes many different forms, but it's all slavery.
Even we've seen recent increased awareness of the so-called blood diamond trade, too.
Mm, yeah, that's another area where anytime, you know, there's a lack of law enforcement and a permissive atmosphere where people need labor, it's always going to, you know, slave labor is always cheaper, right? But if there's no law enforcement, then there's no reason for the people who own the facility to pay. So they can just trick people into it. There's a plentiful supply of people who are desperate for work.
For the entire conversation with Sean Litton and for more on IJM, go to ChristianOutlook.com. Coming up, carpe diem.
You only live once, and you can't take it with you. So live it up, drink it down, laugh it off, burn it at both ends.
Oz Guinness, when the Christian Outlook returns in a moment. Our program is coming to you today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. They are preparing grounded leaders who impact public policy and serve in the public square. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Welcome back to the Christian Outlook. brought to you in partnership with ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. I'm Don Crow. Carpe diem. It's a line I'm sure most of you have heard before. It means seize the day. It comes originally from the poet Horace, but it has come to represent an approach to life, albeit not usually a biblical approach to life. But writer and scholar Oz Guinness is trying to do something about that. His latest book is titled Carpe Diem Redeemed, Seizing the Day, Discerning the Times. Here he is with Eric Metaxas.
Okay, so the Latin carpe diem means literally seize the day. And you're right, it's become a catchword, meaning in a sense, seize the moment. And of course, there's some truth in that, but you're talking about something much deeper.
Absolutely. You know, the idea started to come to me some years ago. I was coming from Brussels to London on the Eurostar. And as you enter St. Pancras Station, there's graffiti of all sorts. But there was one that was legible. You only live once, and you can't take it with you. So live it up, drink it down, laugh it off, burn it at both ends. Now, for all of us, life is short, and it's vulnerable. And so the question is, how do we make the most of it and live wisely and well? And once again, I think the biblical view helps us to do that in a way that no other faith and worldview does.
So then what is the biblical idea?
Well, think of the secularist view first. There is no meaning in time or history unless you give it meaning. What is time? Is history a tale told by an idiot, sound and fury signifying nothing? No, the Bible says. History has meaning. There's purpose in it. God's providence overlaps it, and he invites us to know him and to become partners with him into working into history. And that's the whole notion of calling.
It's interesting because the idea, the secular idea, well, most secular ideas, most people who claim to live by them can't really. In other words, they can't really face the naked horror of a life that is genuinely meaningless in which we have to create our own meaning. Most people don't live that way. They sort of borrow from the biblical view because it's too frightening. It's too horrifying to live a life in which there genuinely is no meaning.
No, absolutely. And you know, who can live with a miserable view of life like that? In the biblical view, there are evils, there are shocks, there are disappointments, but God's providence is overall, and history has great meaning.
Well, so tell us then, what else do you say in the book? What else do you say about it?
Well, there's a whole lot of the aspects of a biblical view of history. Just take one of them that applies today. The often quoted principle that the end is not the end. A lot of Christians are very discouraged and demoralized today. We may be seeing the end of the greatness of the American Republic. We may be seeing the end of the Western civilization. Just as St. Augustine lived to see the end after 800 years of Rome. But always in the world, there are ends of that first sense, endings. The other meaning of the word end is telos, your Greek word, which means end as climax, culmination, objective. And the Lord is always working out his purposes. So there may be endings of the first sort,
right,
but he always has endings of the second sort. And so we're people of hope, whatever.
Well, again, there are many people who they don't feel confident in believing that fully. In other words, there are many detractors who would say, look, I cannot see God's hand in history. It does seem like a grab bag blown open by the wind. It doesn't seem to make sense. How do you make sense of it? Why do you say that it does make sense?
We always add in providence. In other words, it isn't all up to us. Getting to know God isn't up to us. He reveals himself and rescues us and so on. But history is not all up to us. And at the end of a great end, you have the Jewish and Christian notion of the Messiah. For us, the Messiah coming back again. But that providential ending and that, you know, the notion of apocalypse. Today, because of the films and so on, people think of apocalypse as catastrophe, disaster. But the biblical view is unveiling. And when the Messiah returns, there'll be a grand unveiling, and then we'll see the purposes of God. At the moment, we're looking at the bottom side of a carpet, all the mess of the knots and everything. You can't see the pattern. But when there's an unveiling of God's meaning at the end of time, then we'll see the real meaning of it all, because his providence has been working out right through the middle of it.
It's only because I've been studying Homer in these last few years that I know that the word calypso means hidden, and apocalypse is about what is hidden, so that the apocalypse is the revelation of those things which have been hidden. It's interesting to think that. In other words, that those who don't discern meaning in history, that we can say to them, well, in part, you're right. There's much that has been hidden from us. We have just enough to know that there's something, but we don't have the full picture. So that's mm-hmm. true.
No, exactly. One of the great historians talks of history as terror, because we're disappointed and shocked, and there's evil, and all sorts of things go wrong. How can anyone see hope in this mess? You look at the 20th century, genocides, war, massacres, you name it, things like 9/11, more locally, and so on. And yet, for the believer, history is a task, because there is meaning. We don't know the full meaning now, but trusting God, we work in, do our part with our individual callings, and history is no longer a terror, it's a task.
The second chapter of the book is titled Survival of the Fastest. What do you mean by survival of the fastest?
Well, obviously a feature of our advanced modern world is what's called fast life, instant 24/7 pressure. And that is created by the clock. Now, the clock was invented around 1400 in Europe, and many historians say it's the most important invention Europe ever made. But it's the 19th century when the clock coordinated things through railways, railway timetables, and so on. And now, of course, with atomic-level timing. If you go back to your American explorers, Lewis and Clark, they agree to meet at a certain place on a certain day, and they were 9 days apart, their plan, and they describe it in their journal as relatively punctual. 9 days apart. But can you imagine trying to dock a space station 9 days apart? They'd be dead. And we're living in this world of atomic timing, of instant pressure, and so on. And you can think of people looking at their phones 100 times a day. Marx called people wage slaves, but in many ways today we are time slaves.
That's a horrifying thought. So what should we do about it?
Well, we've got to re-explore notions, again, biblical notions, like the Sabbath.
Coming up,
each of us have a calling to make a point in our lives in history. That's unique.
More with Oz Guinness. Stay with us for the final segment of the Christian Outlook. Welcome back to the Christian Outlook. I'm Don Crow. Much of what Oz Guinness is doing for us in his latest book, Carpe Diem Redeemed, has to do with time. That is, regaining a biblical perspective of time, of God's providence over time, and our role in the times within which the Lord has placed us. We'll pick up on the rhythms of time in Scripture. Once again, Eric Metaxas with Oz Guinness.
Well, what about the Sabbath? What do you think about it?
Well, the trouble was it became sort of legalistic, and then people wanted to get away from all forms of legalism, so they threw it out. Yeah. But actually, you see more and more people taking to it again. But, of course, that in the Bible is only one part of that rhythm and renewal, rest and renewal.
I'm not sure what it is that God calls us to do today on the Sabbath. There are different views of it, but it seems to me that most Christians have really thrown out the idea of Sabbath.
Mm-hmm. But put another way, Eric, where we are with the crisis of the West and in America, we need to live an alternative way, a counterculture. And so we need to build back in the foundations that are biblical. And so my little attempt here is to restore a biblical Christian view of time and history. The Bible's view of history, moving with purpose. Each of us have a calling to make a point in our lives in history. That's unique. We're at a time of such dire emergency. We need to go back again to foundations. And I'm impressed. The roots of our American, in this case, freedom, go back to Exodus. In Exodus, you have not a welfare state, but a welfare society. And you've got all sorts of incredible first lessons. And the challenge to transmission, freedom and faith, both have to be handed on in every generation, or they go. You see that again in Exodus. What did Moses talk about the night of the Passover? Not freedom, not the promised land. He talked about children. And you can see that transmission has broken down in America. And I sort of challenge people, we've got to think first principles, realize where we've come from. Do we want to go back and rededicate ourselves, renew the American experiment? Well, someone's got to articulate what these great foundations are and not just lament the darkness,
although you,
but point towards the light. I mean, you take, say, Pax Romana, the Roman peace. As the Romans themselves said, pacification was the peace of despotism. And you can see whether it's Thomas Hobbes or the Old Testament itself or history at other points, if we have this constant fighting, the Cold Civil War as it's called, what it will lead to is a new authoritarianism, a new tyranny, and that's another Leviathan. And that would be incredibly dangerous. We needn't go that way if you have leadership now.
That wraps up this edition of the Christian Outlook. For the complete conversation with Oz Guinness, go to ChristianOutlook.com. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Google Play, and never miss these and other great conversations. Start at ChristianOutlook.com. Thanks for joining us today. Our program has been brought to you in part through our partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. For executive producer Russell Shubin and producers Charlie Richards and David Posian and Michael Cook, I'm Don Crow. Join us again next time for the Christian Outlook. She ran away in a sleep.